will increase your efficiency 20% if you learn to do the tough things first, the ones you don't want to do.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. In this series, Zinn covers it all, from the essence of human happiness.
If you're going to make it a consistent practice of working Saturdays just because you think you've got to work 80 hours a week to be successful, you're just flat out wrong.
To the downside of venture capital.
People said, well, don't sweat the small things. Well, I guarantee if you don't sweat the small things, the big things are going to become a mess.
And the essence of entrepreneurial discipline.
Don't want to wait until you jump off the cliff to grab a parachute.
Now here's Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO and today's guest host.
Hello, everyone. This is Ray Zinn. I'm the author and podcaster for toughthingsfirst.com. And I'm just delighted to have with me today Jerry Sweeney, who is an entrepreneur and a CEO of a company. And so welcome, Jerry.
Thank you, Ray. Thanks. Great to be here.
So tell me a little bit about yourself.
Okay. As you say, I'm a founder and a CEO, active CEO of a software company called Hornbill. We're based here in the UK, but have customers all over the world. We're a SaaS software company. I founded the company back in 1995, and I continue to operate and run that company today.
You must be across the pond from us.
I bet I am. Yeah, I'm just outside London.
Okay, so how big is your company?
In terms of people, yes. About 70 people currently.
So. Okay, 70 people. And what kind of software do you offer?
Well, the software is service management software, business workflow, automation, and collaboration communication software. So if you combine those three things, it's you know, work management for businesses, typically used primarily in mid to enterprise size companies. We start to have relevance and offer value, you know, when an organization is sort of 3,000 or 4,000 people and above.
So how can anyone find out about your company? Where can they go to find out about Hornbill?
Oh, they can just go to hornbill.com. We're there. We've been there since 1995. So.
Okay. So you do workflow, so that's efficiency, production efficiency, performance efficiency, so forth.
Exactly. Business efficiency, business optimization, digital transformation, you know, that whole area, service management and so on.
And, you know, this is a perfect segue into our discussion today. What we're going to talk about is working from remotely as opposed to working at an office. So that's the subject of our podcast today. And tell us, Jerry, the pandemic caused you to kind of shift gears a little bit, pivot. So tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was pretty much a foregone conclusion. So it was simply one day back in the early part of 2020 and around March. I think it was March 18, actually, we decided, based on what the UK government were telling us, to actually just send everyone home and work from home. So we did that. So that was on, a Tuesday or something like that. I can't remember now, to be honest with you. It might be a different day, but let's just say a Tuesday for want of a better day. And everyone went home that day, and we have actually been remote working ever since. So, you know, for us, and that sounds very sort of chaotic, but actually in reality, we're a software company, and our business is in the cloud. You know, we operate our services are operating out of numerous data centers around the world. So we remote manage everything anyway. There was, of course, challenges, logistical challenges, but actually the transition was pretty smooth. We were back up and running the next day. I would say our customers didn't notice anything at all, actually.
So, you know, so here we have the pandemic kind of coming to a conclusion, at least it appears that way, and people are beginning to go back to their office, as you're their not their home office, but their company office. My son works for Apple, and starting in September, they will go back 3 days a week back to the office, and then they get to do one week a year. I think they get to work from home, yeah, remotely. So tell us about what you've decided to do, and now that we're kind of winding down of the pandemic, why have you decided to really just, you know, go remote totally?
Right. So, you know, it's a very interesting set of challenges. I'd written about it earlier on in the 2020 period. But for me, what stood out instantly, as soon as this happened, as soon as you observe organizations doing this en masse, it was, you know, the question that was forefront in my mind is, right, so how do organizations deal with this from a management perspective? Because by far, you know, if you look at your business, the nature of your business, if you're an information worker like we are, you know, so a software company, we need a computer and internet pretty much, and we're good to go. Of course, if you're a nurse or a doctor or something, you physically need to be somewhere. So there's a difference between those kind of businesses. So the first thing to do was identify, you know, the kind of business we were, and then in thinking about it on behalf of our customers and other customers, and the nature of their business. So in the information worker sort of section, if you like, for me, the most obvious question was, wow, how are managers going to deal with this? Because, you know, most managers fairly typically manage people by presence. You know, you know this, you know, you want to meet with people, you get them physically in a location. You want to, you know, if you've got a kind of draconian management approach, you might want to physically see they're in the office, and they're clocking in and clocking out, almost using the door access systems and so on.
So are you saying, Jerry, that we don't need managers anymore?
Well, I wouldn't say we don't need managers, but I think there's a lot of middle managers that are having to reinvent themselves quite a lot, because, you know, you're going to transition from going to saying, okay, well, we need, you know, six people to man our support desk because that's how busy we are, you know, n number of calls divided by average call per hour divided by people. You take that as an example. And it's a very, in a way, it's a very lazy way of doing it. What's really difficult to do, as I'm sure you know, Ray, given your experience, is how do you actually measure people's value to the business by their contribution, by their output, by, you know, a metric other than what time did they get into the office and how long do they stay after the office is closed to get stuff done? And that, I think, is where middle management, I think, have to do, you know, a really big transition. You know, and in their thinking, and so for me, that's the kind of the one compelling reason that is going to bring people back into the office. Not the only compelling reason, but certainly one of the main ones.
So are we saying we need less middle managers now? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the nature of management, I think, has changed, and so I don't think you necessarily need less middle managers. It's actually quite possible you might need more management, but the nature of it is very different, because if you're remote working, we know that, you know, human beings are social beings, and they like social interactions. So in a way, I think companies are going to be obliged to create those opportunities, create those social interactions, whereas before they kind of got all that for free just by, you know, bringing people through the commute and, you know, getting them into the office. And once they got them in there, then all of these things that are really important to people, they kind of got for free without having to create them. In a remote working environment, of course, the complete opposite is true. You don't get any of that for free. And it does matter, you know, even with this relatively small number of people we've got. You know, I talk to our people all the time, and I'm really interested in the way that they sort of perceive what's going on. And people get used to remote working. However, there's still a very clear need for, let's meet some more, let's get out, let's do something, let's get some face-to-face meetings, that kind of thing.
So, you know, with the software available to us now to have these virtual communication meetings, as you would be able to get together kind of face-to-face, you know, virtually, has really allowed this remote working from home, as you would work well. Do you see you doing that more? In other words, do you have a lot of remote meetings on virtual meetings?
Absolutely, definitely more than we had before. And, you know, tools like Zoom and Skype and you know, Teams or whatever you use are, you know, they're have been very useful in this period. The problem with those tools, though, is they're not a complete replacement for face-to-face meetings. I don't know what it is. People like to physically touch each other or something. You end up sort of looking at your people or working at with your team as they're all sort of digital apparitions on your screen, you know. And so the software is undoubtedly critical nowadays, I would say. And certainly we would be using video conferencing type software much more often than we did previously. But there is still a need for face-to-face. I think the other thing I'd say to our advantage is back in, 7 or so years ago, we actually I transitioned the company away from email. And what I mean by that is we used to have many internal conversations on email, as most companies do. Mm-hmm. And I effectively outlawed that practice in the company and moved everyone onto our collaboration software. And we built our collaboration software specifically to do this. And so all of our internal conversations, bar none now, are on our internal collaboration tools. So obviously, when it came to remote working, actually, that was a very easy transition for us to make.
Emails are terrible anyway. I mean, you really awful. Can't get your message. Yeah. Yeah, you can't get your message across in an email. You can make set appointments and you can do some basic communication, but yep. If you're trying to get your point across, it's not really good to try it on with the.
It's not the best medium at all.
No. So now that people are not commuting, what would you say was the average commute time for your company?
Oh, that's a good question. I think probably I'd say an hour to an hour and a half. You know,
each way.
Each way.
Okay. Each wow. Way. 2 hours. So are you now expecting your people to work longer hours? Now that you saved them 2 hours?
No. But to be fair to the people that work in my organization, they're a pretty committed bunch and they do what's needed to get done. We don't need to tell them to do that. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's a massive benefit to the individuals because they get an improved quality of life. They get more time with their family. They're not being forced into packed trains and planes and buses. You know, they don't have to put up with the commute and find ways of making that time valuable to themselves.
But are you getting more time? Are you see that your employees are working a little longer because they know they don't have to commute?
You know, that's really hard for me to actually, if just on the spot there, because I've never really thought about it. I've never really looked for it either. I would say we're getting at least the same level of productivity and output overall. People are definitely accessible and available, which is, of course, very, very important. People tend not to disappear, which is another big risk, you know, disappear off the radar for long periods of time. So I think without having any sort of empirical evidence, I'd probably say I don't think it's really changed for us.
So you're watching for keyboard clicks or mouse moves or something like that?
No, absolutely not. No, actually the complete opposite to that. I think what we're trying to do, what I'm trying to do and encourage everyone to do is to measure people's overall contribution, their value contribution to the business, not what time they switch on, what time they check in, what, you know, any of that kind of stuff.
Okay, so bottom line, do you see more efficiency or about the same as they did when they were working face to face in the office?
So far to me it feels like about the same, about which the same. For me is actually a very good outcome. I think, you know, if that's what we get and people's quality of life is improved while our costs are reduced, you know, that's an all round win, really.
Well, you know, they don't have to get really dressed up. They don't have to, you know, spend a lot more time getting so fixed up as you were to go to work, getting a lunch pack, jumping in the car and, you know, maybe doing other things. So there is a big efficiency working from home, but, Do you require them to have a special room, or can they still have the family around while they're working? Because not everybody has, you know, a home that allows them to have a separate home office.
Yeah, there's two parts to that answer, if I may. And I think these are really, really good points you're raising, Ray. So the first thing is we don't have any specific requirements. We do, from a health and safety perspective, require them to have reasonable working environment for them. Now, we don't know what that means for individuals. Most of our people are they're experienced people, so I don't want to bring age into it, but they're, you know, they're people that, as a typical rule, are not living at home with their parents, that kind of thing, and so they're generally independent and they do have the space and facilities. However, the second part answer that question, which I would highlight, is it actually creates a really significant problem when it comes to hiring new talent, particularly what I'm going to term the younger players, you know, where you might want to bring people in out of university, where they're not necessarily in a long-term relationship, possibly living at home with their parents, and you know, those people tend to flourish more having a destination to go, so you know, because they've been at home for the last 25 years or something. So you know, it's an interesting challenge that the nature of the people you recruit you know, the way in which you recruit actually changes quite a lot.
And so are you going to limit them, and then the younger set that might even be sharing a bedroom with a sibling, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. No, not at all. I think one of the management challenges I see for us as a company is to try and figure out how we facilitate recruiting people in those scenarios. And that's very likely to bring us back into some kind of office environment of some form. However, it might be in the form of a training center or a probation center, kind of, you know, conceptually. I'm sure we could come up with a better name than that. and possibly we could locate that somewhere far more appropriate for the nature of the people we want to hire. So, you know, some of the big universities, the big schools, we could go somewhere near there, you know, where we like to find the people that meet that criteria.
So let's segue into that we know all the positives. All the positives are very, very obvious. But let's talk about the negatives. What are some of the negatives that you're finding working remotely?
I think the first thing I think I opened with was developing and executing on management practices that are appropriate for remote working, because you could hire an expert manager that's been managing people for the last 30 years in an office environment. You bring them into an environment where there is no office, it's a very disabling environment for them. And so I think finding management practices that work and we can enable for managers and also for staff, I think is a negative. It's a difficult problem. There's no simple answer. People are still learning how to do that. I think another negative is loss of the social contact aspects. These are it's pretty important. It's important to people. We're fortunate that we've got quite a lot of developers, and you know, developers kind of like being on their own as a generalization, and so that's possibly not a massive problem for us across the board. So there's that. The loss of visibility and contact, you know, there's definitely an element of that. If you feel that if you're used to measuring or judging people's performance on what you physically see and what you observe and the interactions you observe and so on, that's very difficult to do because you only get to interact and observe people, you know, in planned meetings or, you know, on a one-to-one basis on a Zoom call or something like that.
Bad habits can really crop up very, very quickly. Don't take long to get set in place. In fact, you know, if you're going to develop a bad habit, it only takes a few days and then it takes hold. So how do you detect if you see any bad habits developing with your individual employee?
I think we're probably still figuring that out to some degree. If we have good ways of measuring people's contribution, the way I think about people's contribution in the company, the metrics we can kind of automate and measure, you know, which is another thing, you know, a typical manager would like to do is put stats in and measure that and base performance on that. So, you know, not things like counting lines of code or numbers of defects fixed or numbers of calls, you know, on a service desk taken. These metrics are no good. I think what the things I look for output, I look for visibility. And when I talk about visibility, I don't mean physical visibility. I mean, how visible is an employee to the company, not to me as an individual, but to the company? Are there anyone disappearing off the radar for extended periods of time or those kind of leading indicators? And then you're into fairly normal management practices where you've got to go and look at them, look at their work, look at their output, look at the time they log on and all that kind of stuff to see if there's any problems there. So that's, I would say that, you've almost to be successful managing people remotely or working with people remotely, you've almost got to not focus on the traditional things, because the reality is when people is at home, you know, their dog is going to get sick or the cat is going to, you know, fall off, I don't know, whatever, something's going to happen, you know, or the kids are going to be screaming or, you know, someone's going to come to the door, whatever it is. So you've got to be able to not worry about that stuff, and you've got to focus on the other stuff, which is much harder to measure, like contribution, participation, you know, the sort of team visibility, and so on and so forth. So that would be how I would try and think about it. So not that I'm an expert, just to say, you know, we're still learning. So that's just a...
Well, you know, this is all very interesting because, you know, with this pandemic and people working remotely a lot, I mean, there's a lot of companies that are still operating remotely. Those that can't, obviously, there's companies that can't because they need the interaction face to face with the customer or the client or the patient or whatever. So this is not going away. I mean, we're going to be seeing this remote or a hybrid of this remote, you know, going forward.
Definitely.
You know, I'm on the board of a small SaaS company, and you know, they don't want to work totally remotely. They want that presence. They want that customer to see that they have an address and a phone number that looks like a business with a receptionist or somebody that's answering the phone or whatever. And so they're really worried about people thinking, oh, you're just a little fly by night outfit because you're working remotely. But I think customers are beginning to understand and accept the fact that companies are going to be more remote in their work environment. So,
I think you're right to highlight that. And I think for startups and stuff, especially if you're, you know, if you're a small, say, tech company trying to sell to very large companies, I think that does definitely create a problem. But there is a provenance in any business, of course. If you've been around enough and you've got enough exposure in a customer base, you'll get to a certain, you know, certain momentum where remote working in today's climate really ought to not be a concern for people. They can, you know, they can generally see, certainly in the UK here, you know, as a limited company, you know, you have to be of a certain size to be a limited company, then you're forced to publish your accounts and so on. And that's all for the public record. So it's very easy, you know, to look at a UK company of any kind of substance and get a good sense of how they look. But I think it'll be absolutely crazy for organizations now to expect certain kinds of companies to necessarily have a big flash office, you know, a big HQ and all that, because, you know, while that's great and while it looks good and it's good for the ego and all that good stuff, the reality is, you know, it's a lot of wasted money when you're gonna, you know, the worst scenario I think is where you've got employees now are going to be almost demanding, I think, that they want to work from home some of the time. So if you're going to force them back, they're going to try and do that, right? So yeah. Now you've got to rent office space, which you know is going to be empty 40% of the time or 50% of the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, any major city in the world, office space is, like, you know, the business's single biggest expense by far. And you're in a situation where your organization would almost be held to ransom by the property itself because of the cost of holding something that's largely empty. So I'm sure businesses will adapt and adjust. And I think the positives far outweigh the negatives. And yeah, just as, you know, one example, I know we know what the positives are, but I can tell you now, me as someone that's been founder of this company for 25 years, whether I believed it or not, in reality, when I really thought about it, my hiring pool, my talent pool, was 25 mile radius of where we're located, mm-hmm. just outside of West London. During the pandemic, we hired 5 or 6 people. None of them are in that distance. In fact, they're in different countries and everything. So massively positive advantages over sort of being pinned to that sort of central location.
Jerry, but you know that we need to wrap this up. But you know, in our country, the H-1 visa people, which are the people that are coming in to work, have to have an office, and so the laws are going to have to change somewhat if we're going to have H-1 visa people, you know, working remotely, because you know technically they could be in Timbuktu or, you know, as you said, in India. You know, Russia, you know, Afghanistan, mm-hmm. wherever, and there's no need for H-1 visa if they're working remotely, you know.
So. Well, that's exactly right, and the laws will change, of course, because it's in the local government's interest to allow those people to work locally so they can get taxes. Because of course, you mm-hmm. as a business, you don't have to pay employment taxes if you're employing someone overseas.
Exactly.
And they don't have to pay local taxes. So I don't see that as being a barrier. Of course, it raises a very interesting question: how you bring someone over on a H-1 visa, get them into some physical location where they can live, you know, and sleep, and then work. Of course, that does present a problem. I think that's very similar to the problem you have trying to hire the students, the younger players who are coming into business, where they're perhaps working from home or in sharing a bedroom with a sibling, as you said. There's challenges around these sorts of areas for sure.
Well, this has been a very fruitful podcast, and I really appreciate you coming on today, Jerry, to share these thoughts. I see that, and from my point of view, that we're not going to be going back to the old, as you would, the office environment, that we're going to have more of a hybrid or a full-time remote access to work. And I think we're going to have to get used to it. I think there's some real efficiencies, you know, travel time, having access to people that are not within, you know, physical location of your office, to be able to share and to do valuable work. So thanks again. Really appreciate your time today, and good luck to you and your company.
Thank you very much, Rick.
Yeah, as Jerry said, you can, if you want to know more about a Hornbill, just look at hornbill.com. To learn more about Tough Things First, go to my website, toughthingsfirst.com. Might read my book, Tough Things First, and my new book, Zen of Zen 2. You can find it at any of your local or online book retailers. So thanks again, Jerry. We appreciate the time you have spent with us today.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Tough Things First, candid talk with Silicon Valley's longest-serving CEO, Ray Zinn. Drop by the contact page at toughthingsfirst.com for more about the book, more podcasts, and links to Ray's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages to keep up with Ray Zinn's wisdom daily.